The Mishnah tells us that a Kohen Gadol could give Eidus. And the Gemara here on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis is not happy about that, because when you give Eidus, you know, you have to subject yourself to interrogations, and the Kohen Gadol has a certain covet. So Omar of Yosef, the Gemara offers the following possibility, that when the Mishnah says Meid, it means Meid La Melech. In other words, it would not be below his dignity to testify in a case where the Melech himself is on trial. So the Gemara asks, well, how could the Melech be on trial when the Mishnah tells us that a Melech is not Dan, he cannot judge others, nor can others judge him? And the Gemara quotes Rav Zera that it's a case where he's testifying for the Ben Melech. And the Gemara doesn't agree with Rav Yosef and accept that there would be, it would not be a Pchisis HaKovet, that's like a double negative, but in other words, it's not considered below the dignity of the Melech, of the Kohen Gadol, when he's testifying for the prince. And the Gemara rejects that because Ben Melech Hedjo too. And again, the Gemara goes back to square one. We still haven't resolved the issue. Why is it that we're going to allow and even obligate the Kohen Gadol to testify? It's below his dignity. And the Gemara answers, Elameid Bifnei HaMelech, which means the following. Rashi interprets it that he is testifying in a case of the prince. The prince is on trial. Again, because it can't be the king that's on trial. But it's in the presence of the king. And at this point, the Gemara thinks that the king is a member of the Sanhedrin. And that itself enhances and upgrades the, you know, becomes a first-class Sanhedrin. And for that, it's not below the covet of the Kohen Gadol to testify. Now, the Gemara completely rejects this. How could it be possible that the king is sitting on the Sanhedrin in a case, as the Gemara describes, the Kohen Gadol is testifying, va'eim moshivim melech b'Sanhedrin? We'll never appoint a king to sit as a judge. So the Gemara answers the following, that we're going to find a way in which the Melech is, so to speak, participating in the din, but he's not actually a judge. We have to find that very narrow category. So again, why does the king want to show up at this judgment? In order that it would not be below the dignity of the Kohen Gadol to testify in front of the court. On the other hand, does the king actually sit, you know, together with the judges? That's impossible, because Ein Moshiv and Melech b'Sanhedrin. So the Gemara finds, like, sort of, tiptoeing through the tulips here. The Gemara finds the following: Mishum Yikar the Kohen Gadol Osa v'Yosev Mekabli Neil Asadusa. Initially, at the first stage of this judgment, in order to make it a smooth transition for the Kohen Gadol to testify and upgrade the status of this case and this Bezdin, we're going to have the Melech sit together with the Sanhedrin for the purpose of Mekabli Neil Asadusa, for accepting the Eidus in this case. Who's going to give the testimony? The Kohen Gadol. And who's accepting his testimony? The Melech. But as soon as the testimony is accepted, let's say they validate it, you know, they put the shtempel down, is Kaihu, the Melech stands up, Azil, and he checks out, Uma'ayne Lei Anan Bedine, and the rest of the Sanhedrin now will be Ma'ayin, will investigate and study the judgment, and they'll issue the final verdict. So that the Eidus here of the Kohen Gadol is not a Pchisas Kavod, because the Melech is sitting in the Sanhedrin and he's participating in receiving the Eidus. But we have to keep in mind that as soon as the process of accepting the testimony has completed itself, from that moment and on, the Melech is out of here. Why? Because the Melech could not possibly be part of the of the judgment and sit there as a judge. And the reason for that is going to be explained in the next Gemara. Let's just read quickly in the next Gemara. The Gemara says, Gufa, Ein Moshivin B'Sanhedrin. Why is it that we cannot, V'lo Melech, we cannot appoint a king to be one of the judges? And the Gemara says, D'chsiv, Lo Sane Al Riv, which means you're not allowed to argue in this dispute. What does that mean? You can't argue in the dispute. Lo sana al rav. You cannot dispute the view of someone who's greater than you. In other words, you're not allowed to contradict your Rebbe, you're not allowed to contradict your father, you're not allowed to contradict your mother, you're not allowed to contradict the Melech. If the Melech is going to sit on Sanhedrin, and let's say, for example, the Melech sees that the individuals on who's on trial is guilty, then none of the other judges are going to be able to teach and express a view which would acquit the accused, because then they would be arguing against the Melech. And the Torah says you're not allowed to argue against the Melech. So that's the reason why a king is not allowed to sit as a judge. Okay. Now before we start the Gvuras Yitzchak, which I gave out, let me point out to you that when the Gemara says that it would be below the dignity of the king to testify, or the Gemara is actually focused on the Kohen Gadol, as we said before, then how do we solve that problem? We get the Melech, the king, to be part of this judgment. And the Gemara goes back and forth exactly what part of the judgment is the king allowed to participate in. And that's where we distinguish between Kabbalas Edus and handing down the judgment. Now if you take a look on the top of your page, which is called Reish Samaches, you'll see Halacha Tes, that's the ninth Halacha in the 11th chapter in the Rambam Silchas Sanhedrin. And the Rambam says the following, Bishas Gmar Din, Ein Gomrim Es Dino Bekrovin. How would you define the Rambam? Any clue as to what the Rambam is saying here? What does the word krovim mean? What do you say?
Close.
Relatives.
No.
Krovim technically means relatives. Now, if a father, insofar as he's related to his son, wants to sit on a judgment and his son is on trial, that's no good. That's disqualified. However, if you look carefully at the Rambam, does the Rambam say that a krov is not allowed to be on the Beis Din?
No.
No, what is the Rambam saying? David, since you started, can I...
I don't see it on the page here, so I'm not sure what you're talking
about. Oh, you don't have it? The top line of Reish Samaches.
It's right here?
Yeah. This is the Rambam's language.
Okay.
The top line.
Okay.
What part of the judgment is the Rambam addressing here?
He's just saying the Gemar at the end.
Correct, the Gemar Din. What's the end? What does Gemar Din mean?
It's the final judgment.
Final judgment. In other words, the Rambam is disqualifying a relative
from just the final judgment.
For the final judgment. Can you think of a proof to this Rambam? Because the Rambam is saying Agvalda Gechidish. He's implying that the judge might be related to the accused, and he could participate in the judgment as long as he's not part of the Gemara Din. What Gemara could you quote to prove that the Rambam is right? Again, how did we get the Kohen Gadol into the court to testify? Remember, it was below his dignity. Who had to show up as part of the judgment?
The king.
And who's being judged?
The king.
No, we don't judge a king.
Right. The king's son.
King's son. Well, how could the king possibly participate in the judgment of his own son, he's a Karel. What would be the Rambam's answer?
He's just on the Gemara Din.
Correct. He's only there, the king, for the Kabbalah's Eidus.
It's a human
thing. Exactly. Look at the next line in the Rambam. Aval b'tchilas din, says the Rambam, early in the stage of the din, leka psul kroviv. There is no disqualification of relatives. And this is fantastic, because if you take this Rambam, it'll really shed a great light on our Gemara. We need to get the Kohen Gadol to testify. Who's on trial? The prince is on trial. In order to upgrade this Bezdin so that it's not below the dignity of the Kohen Gadol to testify, we need to get the Melech involved in the judgment. Well, a Melech, the Gemara says, can't be involved in the judgment, but we can have him there for Kabbalah's Eidus. And then he drops out. That was the Gemara. David?
If someone's not there for the Gemar Din, is it like they weren't there as part of the whole Sanhedrin, as part of the whole body of judges?
I'm not sure. I would say the following, that it seems that Kabbalah's Eidus is a separate entity, if you follow what I'm saying. What you do with the Eidus, once the Eidus has been interrogated and confirmed as valid evidence, that's when we get exciting. That's when the Bezdin gets excited. You know, we have let's say 23 judges on a Sanhedrin, and once the Eidus was accepted, then now the Sanhedrin goes into high gear. But at this point, who has to drop out? The Krovim have to drop out, because they can accept the Eidus. Again, I don't know why, but we have to understand that. But they could no longer, but they cannot participate in the final judgment. That's called Gemar Din.
But wait, is it just the voting or the deliberating?
Let's go back to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Asa v'yasiv, the father who's the king, comes and he sits down as part of the Bezdin, and that's again to upgrade the status of the Bezdin so it won't be below the dignity of the Kohen Gadol to testify. Mekabli Neil Asadusa, right? He accepts the Eidus. Kai Hu, and he stands up, the Uzzle, and he checks out. It sounds like who's doing the deliberation?
He's not involved.
It's the balance of the Bezdin. Now again, in terms of the numbers, you know, it could be that we only had 71 judges, and the king was, you know, or let's go back to the case of 23 judges. So he was number 23, the king. So it could be that once he checks out, we're going to have to replace him with another judge. Again, that's logically fair. But when I saw this Rambam, I got very excited about it, because the Rambam is really, in a sense, reflecting what our Gemara is saying. Now, he quotes a commentary on the Toras Kohanim called the Ezras Kohanim. I'm not familiar with this commentary. Who writes, Efshar, it's possible, he says, again, I'm not reading every word, so you're on line 4 if you want to follow me. Dafka dayonim akrovim zelazeh rak posel b'shas gmar din. Avol dayonim akrovim lelove olamalve psulim afilu tchilas din. So the Ezras Kohanim, based on his interpretation of a Sifra is, it goes back to Chazal, he comes to the opposite conclusion, that when we say Dayanim are only disqualified if they're relatives at the point of Gemar Din, that's only if the Dayanim are related one to the other. But as far as the Dayanim being related to one of the Balei Din, the litigants, those Krovim are out, even as far as Tchilas Din. Now, if that be the case, we're in trouble with our Gemara. So let's imagine, Rabosa, I'm just being dramatic, that the Ezras Kohanim is standing right here in our room with a long white flowing beard. And he says to me, well, if the Dayanim are related to one of the litigants, he cannot participate even in the Tchilas Din. I'm going to ask you, Rabbi Ezra's Kohanim, we'll call him Ayin Chav, right? Ezra's Kohanim. What are you going to do with our Gemara in Sanhedrin? Gemara in Sanhedrin says that the king will sit there as part of the Beis Din when his son is on trial in order to receive the Avis. But you just told me that the king is possible from Tchilas Din. So that's why I think, again, I'm trying not to cheat, you know, and see what he's going to say about it, but I think what's going to have to be, according to the Ezra's Kohanim, is that, and maybe Reuven, you were on that line before, that it could be that according to Ezra's Kohanim, Kabbalas Avis is not even Tchilas Din. It's the preliminary stage before the Tchilas Din. The Tchilas Din will begin after the Avis was accepted. So that the Tchilas Din will be the deliberations. You know, we have evidence here, we have evidence there, we have to weigh the evidence one against the other. In that context, we cannot have anyone who's related to the Nido, to the accused. So the Melech is going to have to check out as soon as we start weighing one evidence against the other. But accepting testimony is not even part of Tchilas Din. So we have three stages. We have stage number one, which is called the introduction. Stage number two, which is the Tchilas Din. And stage number three, which is the Gemara Din. The first stage of introduction means listening to the testimony and deciding whether or not the witnesses are on the up. You know, whether they can answer all our questions and show that it's mechuvenes, meaning it's on target. Then we're finished with the introductory material. All the evidence is on the table. Now we're going to deliberate. We have evidence here, evidence there. That's already Tchilas Din. And finally, we get to the third stage, which is the Gemara Din. And the Gemara Din means when they finally stand up, take a vote, and issue their final verdict.
Just asking, doesn't it refer to monetary issue?
Correct. And we would say with a Kolshkin, if the Ezra's Kohanim says that the Dayanim, if they're related to the Lov and Malva apostle, how much more so in the case of Dini Nefashos? Because the psulim that apply to Dini Nefashos are that much more restrictive in a sense than they are in the case of Dini Mominos. Omnam, he says, Afilu Neima de Apostle Tchilas Din. Even if we accept the Ezra's Kohanim against the Rambam, which means that Krovim, if they're related to the one who's being judged, are disqualified as judges even for Tchilas Din, if we accept the Ezra's Kohanim, then he says, but Chidushi Agranat, I'll tell you in just a second who that is, cause of the Kabbalas Eidus Bebezdin, Ika Gimel Dvarim, Chadosh Mias veKabbalas Eidus Shenis LeKayim Eidus HaEidim Da'inu SheYigmur HaBezdin LiAcher HaShmia SheEidus Havi Emes Zenikra Kiyum HaEidus Shlishis Lifsok Es HaDin. Now, I just want to give you a little bit of a perspective as to who the Granat was, because, you know, it's not every day that you mention the Granat. Granat stands for Hagon Rabbeinu Naftali Trop. And he was a Rosh Hashiva in Radin. Does anybody know where Radin is? But that's not my main question. But rather, who established the yeshiva in Radin? Excellent. So Radin was the hometown of the Chofetz Chaim. He established the yeshiva in his hometown in Radin. And he appointed Rabbi Naftali Trop as Rosh Hashiva. If I'm not mistaken, later on, as things go, you know, the Jews always had to be on the move, unfortunately. So later on, I think Rabbi Naftali was a Rosh Hashiva in the Mir, if I'm not mistaken. But I have to double check that. So Rabbi Naftali says the following, that even with regard to Kabbalas Eidus, if you want to define Kabbalas Eidus in Beis Din, and you want to know if that's called Tchilas Din or not, he says divide it up into three parts. The first part, he says, is to listen and to accept the testimony of the Eidus. And number two is Lekayim Ha'Eidus Ha'Eidin, which means the following, that after you've completed the process of accepting the Eidus, now there begins a process which is called Kiyum Ha'Eidus. Kiyum Ha'Eidus means to decide whether or not the Eidus is true, is reliable. Because again, even if they passed all the tests and they answered all the interrogations, there still may be other testimony that would undermine their testimony, like for example, Hakasho, Hasama. And that's called second stage, Kiyum Ha'Eidus. Finally, we get to the point where after we Mekayim the Eidus, we're up to the Psak Din. So then according to Rav Naftali Trupp, listening to the witnesses and interrogating them might be the stage before Tchilas Din. Because Tchilas Din would be with Kiyum Ha'Eidus, when we finally establish and verify the truth or the reliability of the testimony, meaning that we exclude any other evidence that's trying to undermine and disqualify the Eidus. That's when we begin with the din. So even if I accept the Ezra's Kohanim and a karov is possible a din, even at the point of what? Of Tchilas Din, there's something before Tchilas Din. Not the level of Kiyum Ha'edus. Kiyum Ha'edus means we have to decide how to weigh this evidence against other possible antithetical evidence. That's Tchilas Din. But there's something before Tchilas Din, and that's called Kabbalas Ha'edus. So therefore the Ezra's Kohanim could accept, based on this Rav Naftali, our Gemara, that the Melech is allowed to participate in listening to the Eidus for his own son, even though he's a Karo. Because that's not even what? Tchilas Din. Are you with me, Rabosai? This is preliminary before Tchilas Din.
It's a common America, preliminary hearing. It's a presentation of facts.
But I'll tell you the honest truth, Hanan. If you had asked me intuitively before I saw this, I would never, ever buy into this, that listening to the testimony and accepting it is preliminary, what do you call it, preliminary judgment?
Hearing.
No. This is not preliminary. I would have said, this is, you got to be part of the judges here. This is not like, get a bunch of... pardon the expression, people from the street, to listen to the Eidus and then we'll build beyond that. No, listening to the Eidus, interrogating the Eidus, there's a very famous story about the Vilna Gaon that they interrogated the Eidim and they felt, they sensed that something was wrong here. So they brought the case to the Gaon, and the Gaon interrogated them, and he decided they were lying, they were fabricating. And they asked the Gaon, how did you know? I mean, are you a miracle maker? Are you a Rebbe? The Gaon was not known as a Chassidish Rebbe, if you know what I mean. So the Gaon answered that what I did was, I interrogated them on very great details, very minute details, and they both said exactly the same thing. You take each aid separately. He says they must have been in collusion. But you see that Kabbalas Eidus is a very, it's a very tricky business, very challenging endeavor. But now we have Rav Naftali Trupp, and we put that together with the Ezra's Kohanim. If you churn it all together, what you come out with is that listening to the Eidus and interrogating the Eidus to the point to which we can say this Eidus passed all the tests, and we were not able to trip them up, that's called a hakdama, that's the introduction. But the Tchilas Din only begins where that process ends. And now the Tchilas Din is Kiyum Ha'Eidus, to weigh the Eidus and see whether or not that testimony has a weight of evidence. That's the Tchilas Din. And that's when the Melech would have to check out in the judgment of his son. When the Gemara says in Masechta Rosh Hashanah that accepting the Eidus is the beginning of the judgment, that, according to Rav Naftali, is referring to the Kiyum Eidus, meaning this, the stage after we accepted the Eidim, and now we're trying to weigh their evidence and determine whether or not, in the broader picture, it's reliable evidence. That's called Kiyuma Eidus. Now, Kiyuma Eidus is one inch before Gmar Din, because once you were Mekayim the Eidus, then there's really nothing left to do except to hand down the final verdict. So the main purpose or responsibility of the judges is to establish the reliability of the testimony. That's the Tchilas Din. That's called Kiyuma Eidus. And then they're ready for the finale, and that is Gemar Din. That's the Pesach Din. So at the end of this paragraph, he summarizes the whole paragraph. He says, "Lefizeh nira da'afilu inayma dekrovim l'malfa v'lova psulim l'tchilas din." Even if we accept the premise of the Ezra's Kohanim against the Rambam, that already at tchilas din we have to disqualify the krovim who are related to the malva and the lova, and Ruvein now will say it the way you said it. And that's in Dine Mavinos. How much more so in Dine Nefashos? Hainu rak l'kiyuma Eidus. Because Kiyuma Eidus is the Tchilas Din. Aval Shmias Eidus Grein, they're just listening to the Eidus to make sure that there's no mistake in the Eidus. There's no discrepancy between the two witnesses. Lo avi Tchilas Din. That's already an introduction to Tchilas Din. And afilu bekrovim, even in relatives. Hamelech lo havisham rak l'shmiya greidim ishmachin leka psul karov. The king is only there in his son's trial for the kabbalas eidus, which means shmiyas eidus. But as far as the diyun, the judgment and deliberation, do we accept this eidus? Is it reliable? What other factors on the ground seem to indicate perhaps differently, or there are other Eidim that came in and they disqualified? All that is Tchilas Din. The Melech has to check out as soon as he hears the testimony and decides that there was no discrepancy between one witness and the other.
Am I correct that Eidim cannot be Krovim?
Correct.
So is this a similar pattern here, that the Dayan can't be Krovim also? For similar reasons?
Yeah, very similar, correct. But this structure that we're creating today would not apply to Eidus.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because Eidus is the testimony, and if they're related to each other or to one of the Bali Adin or one of the accused, then they're definitely possible. That definitely. But in Dayanim, because we're cutting, we're slicing the din into such different strata, you know, different activities and at different stages. I mean, do you realize, Rav Moshe, we're using a very sharp tool over here. It's very specific. You know, we're cutting something down into three different parts. One is Shmias HaEidus for Kabbalasam, the other is weighing the Eidus to see if it's Mekuyam, meaning we can rely on this Eidim, and finally the Gemara did. And in stages B and C, we got to get the Karav out of there. You know, he can't sit on the judge. But stage A is the introduction. You see, Rav Osai, in the old days, I used to give a class here on Derech HaLibud, on the methodology. This would be a prime example of one of my structures. One of my structures is called introduction versus an integral part of the process. I'll give you an example. If you're curious. Are you curious at all? Just a small example or two. Maybe I'll give two. Maybe. In the Haggadah Shel Pesach, there are certain parts of the Haggadah that are so integral. Is that how you say it? Integral? Or is it integral? I don't know.
Either one.
That the minhag, the custom requires that you pick up the kos. My Rebbe picked up the cuss from the beginning of the Haggadah till the end because he held that every part was crucial. But in the minhag itself, Now, the last part of the Haggadah is called Nirtza. And that part of the Haggadah has to deals with what's called the Geula Hasidu, the ultimate redemption. There are two minhagim as to at what point you have to pick up the yayin. You'll check out your Haggadah and see what they tell you. And if you tell you X, I'll show you a different Haggadah, they'll say Y. So if you recall, after we finish eating the Afikoman, we're ready to invite Eliyahu HaNavi. And we have a kuss for Eliyahu HaNavi. In my family, the way I was brought up as a child was that Eliyahu actually drinks from the kuss, which means that my brother used to shake the table underneath, you know. And as children, we believed that Eliyahu was drinking from the kuss. Could be he does drink from the kuss. I don't know. You'll ask your rebbeim. In any event, immediately after Eliyahu checks out, we start with a paragraph that's called Shvoch HaMoscha L'Goyim. And there are two minhagim. You'll check a look at the Maralmi Prag's Haggadah. He says you have to already pick up the kuss at Shvoch HaMoscha L'Goyim. And I have no doubt that the issue of whether we pick up the kuss for Shvoch HaMoscha L'Goyim depends upon whether Shvoch HaMoscha L'Goyim is an introduction or it's an integral part. I'll give you another example. Some have the minig in Malchios on Musaf of Rosh Hashanah when the Shliach Tzibur repeats the Shmon Esrei, that as soon as we get to Aleinu L'Shabeach, we open up the Aron. That depends on where Malchios begins. If Aleinu L'Shabeach is an integral part of Malchios, then you have to open up the Aron. If, on the other hand, Aleinu L'Shabeach is only an introduction to Malchus, then you don't have to open up the Aron, and there are two minhagim as to when you open up the Aron. But this goes on and on and on. Like, for example, in Shechita, for Kodshim, there's a tremendous machlokes whether or not Shechita is an integral part of the Avodah, or it's only an introduction to the Avodah, and the Avodah begins with Kabbalah Saddam. In, for example, let's say Mezigas HaKos, you know, we have to drink Dalit Kosos on Leila Pesach. What is the halacha of Mezigas HaKos? Now again, you might think that Mezigas HaKos means pouring the wine into the cup. That's a modern Israeli translation. A halachic translation of Mezigas HaKos is what?
Mix
what and what?
Water.
Excellent. Water with concentrated wine, which is called Yayin Chai. So if you take a look at the Rambam seems to indicate that already at the point of Mezigas HaKos, we begin the mitzvah of Dalit Kosos. And he wants the Mezigas HaKos to be done in a very specific way, by very specific individuals, and a very specific time on the clock, because Dalit Kosos is only when it's Lila. So let's say, for example, they daven early, which on certain parts of the planet, that's what they'll do, even on Leil Pesach, they have no choice. It doesn't get dark till later, or there's dangers, and so forth and so on. So you'll get home, and it's still light out. Again, you already davened Ma'ariv, you were Makabel Tosefes Pesach, you know, Kabbalah's Kedush Sayom, but it's not like Lila, so you have to wait to eat the matzah and the morar and the Korban Pesach back to the time of the Korban Pesach till it's Lila, because it says, Ochlus Abosah Ba Lila till it's kosher. And the same applies to Dalit Kosos. So the first of the Dalit Kosos already requires Lila. The Rambam is going to say that even the Mezigah Sakos is going to have to be a Lila, because the Mezigah is part of the mitzvah. It's not just an introduction. You and I would say, well, this is just an introduction. You know, you got to get your wine in the glass. You know, so again, there are millions of examples of this. So that's why I try to find as many examples as I can, because it's like a training session. You know, like if you want to be a sports, you have to train. Are there any shortcuts? Well, maybe there are shortcuts if you do a very intensive training. So I think for alumnus, you know, to learn conceptually, you need an intensive training. So that's why I created this program called Methodology, otherwise known as Derech HaLimud. one day you'll remember me and you'll say, oh, I knew Rabbi Berzon who wrote that great work on Derech HaLiv. Just kidding. So this example is wonderful. Where do you fit Kabbalah Seidus? I would have told you, if you woke me up in the middle of the night, Kabbalah Seidus is Tchilas Din. But now we're coming to the conclusion, and I think our sugya begs this, that Kabbalah Seidus is not part of the Din. It's only an introduction, which is a pella when you think about it. Hence, the Melech could be there for the Kabbalah Seidus, and he's part of the Beis Din. But as soon as the Kabbalah Seidus is over, is completed, and now we're up to the second stage, which is what? Kiyum HaEidus. At that point, we're in Tchilas HaDin, and the Melech has to be replaced. He has to check out. But again, we just wanted to get the Kohen Gadol in for his testimony, and we needed to upgrade the Beis Din so it wouldn't be a Prisas HaKovet to the Kohen Gadol. That we can do because the Melech has accepted his Eidus, the Eidus of the Kohen Gadol. Now the next paragraph is very interesting, but since we're running a little bit short on time, I would leave this paragraph out, and maybe Beli Neder at some future point, I don't think we'll get to today, we'll pick it up. But I am curious about this next paragraph on the left column that starts with the words Ein Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin. So we learned the Braisa. And the Braisa, if you remember, disqualifies the Melech from sitting as a judge. The Gemara asks, why should we disqualify the Melech for sitting as a judge? And the Gemara answers, because of the pasuk Lo San Al Riv, Lo San Al Rav. That it'll if you allow the Melech to be part of the Beis Din, then you basically undermine the whole process of judgment, because the other judges are not allowed to argue and contradict the Melech. Now, Rabosai, I'm asking you to tell me, how would you perhaps engineer it in such a way that we could have our cake and eat it too? We could have the Melech participate as a judge without violating Lo San Al Riv. Can you think of a way of orchestrating that? Say what? No. I'm asking, could the Melech be part of the judgment from soup to nuts, even for Gmar Din, and we can circumvent this violation of Lo San Al Riv?
Have him vote.
I don't know about voting, because then he's not a judge if he can't vote. But I would start your sentence, but finish it differently. I would have him what? Express his opinion when?
At the end.
That would solve the problem. Why? Because all the judges are free to express their opinion. They may be expressing opinions that would contradict that of the Melech, but the Melech hasn't expressed his opinion yet. So let him be last. Now we have another problem. Because watch what happens if the Melech is going to sit there, right? And all the judges come before him, each one is expressing his opinion. And the Melech has to sit there like, what word should I use? You know, like with his mouth shut, you know what I mean? That also might be a problem, because then you're undermining the covenant that we have to a Melech. So who should be the first judge to express his opinion in terms of his covenant? The Melech himself. Because the Melech deserves more covenant than anyone on the Beis Din. So we're in a bind over here. Why? Because on the one end, we want to postpone the Melech's participation, his oral vocalizing his opinion till the end. So then we can circumvent the violation of Lo San Al Riv, and all the judges are free to express whatever opinion they want. On the other end, we have a problem of Kvod HaMelech, and from the perspective of Kvod HaMelech, he should be what?
First.
The first to express his opinion. Do you see the tension here? That's what this paragraph is about. Yeah.
If he was the last to go, wouldn't the other judges almost be afraid to express their opinion? They'd be intimidated by him?
No, we're going to tell the judges the following. You're not contradicting the Melech because he hasn't expressed his opinion. Say what you want. Laissez-faire, kind of. In this paragraph, he goes back to our Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta. Our Mishnah is a bit unusual in terms of its style. Usually the Gemara will ask Minayin, but the Mishnah here in this case asks Minayin. The highest court in the land has to have how many judges, Rabbosai? 71. So the Mishnah says, how do we know such a thing? Our Mishnah. You can open it up. Don't rely on my memory here. Shake it out. And the Mishnah derives it from Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because after the whole story with Yisro, Moshe is commanded, is told to gather together 70 judges. And the Gemara says, well, that only gives you the number 70. How do you know 71? Umoshe al gabehem. Let me just make sure we have that. Yeah, it's right there in the Mishnah. Umoshe al gabehem. So Moshe Rabbeinu is part of the judgment. So what does that have to do with our discussion today? Anybody?
It'd be like the king.
I'm not sure what you mean, be like. If you can leave those words out. Moshe Rabbeinu is the king.
Right.
How do I know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the king? It says, Vayehi Bishrud Melech, Bisase Froshayam, and the Gemara tells us that that Melech is a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu wears two hats. But Lechora, these two hats are mutually exclusive. On the one hand, he wears the hat of the Melech. On the other hand, he's wearing the hat of the Nasi Sanhedrin. He is Al-Gabayim. Al-Gabayim means he's the Nasi. He supervises and so forth and so on. But he's number 71. Our Gemara says that Ein Moshiv and Melech B'Sanhedrin. How could it possibly be that Moshe Rabbeinu is the 71st member of the Sanhedrin when we say the Melech can't be on the Sanhedrin? And Moshe Rabbeinu is a Melech. We're really stuck over here. He says at the end of the first paragraph, Eich ha'midu Moshe b'Sanhedrin. How could Moshe be part of the Sanhedrin? She'ein ma'midu Melech b'Sanhedrin. And we know that, as the Gemara in Zvachim points out, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Melech. How could he be part of the Sanhedrin? In other words, we're going to learn from Moshe Rabbeinu that we need the 71st member of the Sanhedrin because Moshe is part of the Sanhedrin. But that's impossible because Ein Moshe even Melech the Sanhedrin. In the next paragraph, he asks the same kasha about David. The Gemara says, or at least the Mishnah and the Rambam amplifies this, that David was the Nasi of the Sanhedrin in his time. Now wait a second. If David is the Nasi of Sanhedrin, how many members are there in that court besides David? 70. David is number 71, but David is the Melech B'Yisrael. How could he possibly be the 71st member of the Sanhedrin when Ein Moshe even Melech the Sanhedrin? He's a Melech. Now how do we know that he was the Nasi Sanhedrin? Or for that, we'd have to learn a chapter in Tanakh, in Sefer Shmuel, together with the Gemara Moikot Daf Tezayin, because in Sefer Shmuel, the Pasuk describes, the Pasuk describes David HaMelech as Yoshev B'Sheves Tachkamoni. Tachkamoni means the wisdom, is a reference to Bezdin. So David HaMelech sits on the Sanhedrin, and yet he's a Melech. We have a principle of Ein Moshiv and Melech B'Sanhedrin. So we have two kashas. The first kash is on whom? Moshe Rabbeinu. The second kash is on David HaMelech. Rabbi Morris?
Okay, gentlemen. Rare that the full Sanhedrin was convened to begin with. Is that correct?
I don't know. You may know something that I don't know. There's so many different functions of the Bezdin of 71. You know, I don't know how rare it was. The Gemara says in Makkos that it was rare that they would put someone to death. I mean, I don't know if that's what you're referring to. Well, so how do we answer again? Let's repeat. We're stuck with both Moshe Rabbeinu and David. Both were, number one, a Nasi and Sanhedrin each in their time. And number two, they were both Melechs. So how could it be? So in order to answer this question, he quotes a Ran, which is on the bottom of your page. And the Ran says that the Imamish, a radical position of the Ran, and the Ran says the following, that there are two different halachas with regard to the relationship between the Melech and Sanhedrin. One halacha is the Melech part of the Sanhedrin? And the other halacha is going to be whether the Melech is a, I don't know what to call it, a spectator. I'm going to just use that word loosely. He's not officially part of the Sanhedrin. He's not going to take part in the vote of the Sanhedrin and the final verdict and decision, but he will take part of the deliberations in the Sanhedrin. Now, if you're with me until here, which of the two cases would come under Ein Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin, the disqualification of a Melech B'Sanhedrin? Would it be Melech being part of the Sanhedrin or Melech deliberating when he's not part of the Sanhedrin? We'll call it an active spectator. In which case would you say the Melech is excluded? And keep in mind, we're going to use this Ron to answer that problem of both Moshe and David.
Give us two cases again.
Again, two cases. One is where the Melech is an integral part of the Minyan. Minyan means the number. He will therefore be part of the final decision, and he will express his view. Right. And the other one is to say, no, he's part of the deliberation. Which one would you say? I'm just trying to see, you know, what your intuitive response would be. Which of those two would be described under the principle halacha of Ein Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin? Is it we cannot allow the Melech to be part of the Sanhedrin, or we cannot allow the Melech to deliberate, even if he's not part of the Sanhedrin?
I said the first one, to be part of the Sanhedrin.
Oh, that's exactly what I was hoping you would say, because that's what I would have said. And the Ran says just the opposite. Unbelievable Ran. This is a revolution. The Ran says that if the Melech is part of the Sanhedrin, there's no problem. We'll never violate Losan al Riv. Why not? We're not going to inhibit the other members of the Sanhedrin, right? Even though the Melech is part of that Sanhedrin. Why not?
He's last.
David, you saved me there.
Right.
I was about to break into a cold sweat. Because the Melech is going to be last. But if the Melech is not part of the Sanhedrin, he's only there to deliberate, then he's not going to be last. He's going to be an active participant in expressing his view. And he's going to say, well, I think he's guilty. And then the other members of the Sanhedrin are going to say, we can't contradict the Melech because the Torah says, Losan al Riv. And basically the whole justice system goes down the tubes. But if on the other hand says the Ran, he will be part of the Sanhedrin, then we'll delay his vocalization of his opinion until the end of the court. So just to summarize, you'll see this on the next page. You have Reish Samach Tes?
Yeah.
Harei, three lines down from the top, Mevur B'Divrei HaRan, we're on the fourth line down. We see clearly from the Ran, again, we didn't have time because we gave a little time to Rabbi Meis, but we didn't read the Ran. But we see from this Ran, the Yecholim LaHoshiv Melech B'Sanhedrin. We can appoint a Melech to the Sanhedrin. The Aschilu Menatzad. Menatzad means we'll start the deliberation with one of the other members of the Sanhedrin, so that no one's inhibited by Losan al Riv. But getting back to the Ran on the top line, Avol Kisha Eino Min Aminyan, if the Melech plays an advisory role, sort of he's helping out in weighing the evidence, that's called Eino Min Aminyan. Then Pa'amim, in certain cases, Yirtze Lachlok Im Echad Min HaSanhedrin. He will express opinion against one of the members of Sanhedrin. So Ploni Almoni got up and he said, well, I think he's innocent because of this reason, that reason, and the Melech, who's now playing an active role as a participant in the deliberations, he's going to say, no, he's guilty, he's not innocent. And then, if anybody wants to contradict the Melech, it's Elo San Al Rif. That's what it means when it says, Ein Moshivin Melech B'Sanhedrin. We can't have the Melech sit on the Sanhedrin, meaning sit on the sidelines of the Sanhedrin. But as far as being part of the Minyan in Sanhedrin, no problem, because we're going to be Maskil Minatzad, and the Melech is going to be the last one to express his opinion.
The Melech can't vote on the Gemar Din, though, even so. Correct.
But the deliberations will be totally flat, if you follow me. They will not fulfill that active give and take, because the melech in this advisory role, in the spectator, active spectator, will be expressing his opinion, and at that point, forget it. All the deliberations will have to freeze in their tracks, because no one could contradict the melech. If, on the other hand, the melech is part of what? Part of the Sanhedrin, he's actually been a minion, then he will express his opinion last. We have such halacha with regard to a Nasi also. The Nasi Sanhedrin is considered the Chacham Gadol, so we don't want to inhibit the other judges. We're going to ask him to delay his expression. Okay, Rabosai, I'm here for questions. I just want to officially end the Shia, because I try to keep to my time, which I didn't do today, but that really wasn't totally my fault. What we're up to is the Ramah, so I don't know if tomorrow you're around at the same time, and we'll try to pick up the Ramah.
When the Melech speaks last, but he doesn't vote, wouldn't everybody else then be forced to agree with him by having heard his opinion of the din? Wouldn't they be forced to then to accept his opinion?
No. I'll tell you why. Because the contradiction is only when I say that you said something wrong. When it comes to voting, everyone has the moral and you know, the psychological responsibility to ask himself what he thinks is the final judgment, okay, whether this guy is guilty or not.
All right. You the same sheet tomorrow?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.